Welcome back to the MLS NetBoys podcast. My name is Chase, and I'm here with my good friend Jacob, spitting everything MLS. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Happy to be here for episode 50. Episode 50.
That is right.
Of the MLS NetBoys show.
We promised you guys a new intro.
We promised a lot.
We promised a lot on this and that we never do.
One of these days we'll have an Instagram that Chase can combat Euro snobs and Sounders fans with online, but
we're just going to get banned. It's going to be MLS NetBoys show, like 1, then 2, then 3. We'll just keep putting different numbers at the end.
Love it. Man. Kind of strange week of MLS.
Chase sucked. All the games sucked.
Chase had the pleasure of watching the Timbers game, Timbers versus Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was close enough to throw something at Quinn Sullivan if I really wanted to.
You weren't feeling like a, well, I won't say, but I don't want to alienate certain MLS fan bases, but.
He was close enough. You know what I seriously thought? And I told this to my girlfriend's cousin. I was like, you just throw an M&M, because I had like a little like box of M&Ms, and it was like, they were close enough. I could probably just pelt one of them with an M&M. I was like, nobody would know.
Who's
going to track an M&M back to me? If you throw like a can of beer or something, like, they'll for sure come find you. Like, they'll be able to find
M&M.
It. You can't. Yeah, just a single, just red M&M just pelts Quinn Sullivan right in the side of the head.
That would be hard, first of all, to get the accuracy on something that small and like light.
But I have faith. I feel like I could.
Picture just the replay. If there happened to be a camera on the crowd, just fucking
just
like
me, just
full extension in the cold, wet ring, just as hard as you can.
Me in slow-mo just chucking a, like a M&M straight into Julian Carranza's eye. Oh, man. I seriously thought about it. Just seeing you, there's something like, we always criticize those fans, but there's just something different about when your team's just getting destroyed at home and you're watching like these other players celebrate 10 feet away from you.
Where you can like hear, you can actually like hear them. And
oh, yeah. I was just hearing them just like scream and celebrate and hug each other. And like they were right in front of me, like 10 feet away from me. I could have just easily thrown an M&M right at them. Maybe like 10 yards, not 10 feet. It was pretty close, though.
It's a little alarming because Chase always talks about how for one of our Seattle trips, he wants us to get like on field level like tickets. And now he's telling me how much like he's been tempted to just assault one of the players on the field. Man, picture we go up there and Seattle's like up 3-0 and Chase just loses it. He jumps out of his, hops over the advertising board and starts just punching Jackson Reagan in the temple.
I would never hurt a Seattle player because I would instantly make a beeline to Brian Schmetzer.
Not even doing it. Oh! his coffee flies out of his hands.
Oh, man. No, I don't mean any of this. I'm not Vanni Sartini. I don't actually want to threaten anybody's life.
You're not going to threaten somebody's life over result.
Yeah, no. It is. There is that like primal instinct inside of you, and then you realize like I'm not playing in this game. I have, you know, I had no, like.
Then you realize
I had no way to really affect this outcome. I guess if I threw something at one of the players, I mean, I could have.
That's a normal, rational thought. You know, the anger goes to you. You, like, have this fleeting moment, and you're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, this guy's just going to work, doing his job. He's a little more annoying than, you know, I am at work. But it's like, picture your...
Maybe that's why people throw things, because that's how they actually affect the game from the stands.
Picture you're just, like, an accountant. And then, like, somebody from the rival accountant, like, office down, like, the hallway just, like,
chucks
even
a
in
can
your own
of beer at your head.
In your own office, like, your competitor just walks over, grabs a mug of hot coffee, and just hucks it as you're at, like, the back of your head.
Sounds like a sketch, like, a sketch from, like, a Will Ferrell movie or something, like.
Oh, man.
That would be horrifying. I'm just picturing, like, my life at work, just somebody just from, like, a rival store just comes in and just grabs a can of beer and throws it at me. Man.
Well, anyway. Opening up with the New England Revolution hosting Chicago Fire in a very cold, like freezing rain, empty stadium. It says 15,000 people were at this game. I don't think so.
That's a lie.
Maybe like 800.
Were they all sitting in the nosebleeds?
Maybe like 2,000 people. Anyway, I heard the weather was terrible. It was, honestly, but whatever. 1-1 draw, New England Revolution, Chicago Fire, and Hugo Cupers. 2 goals in 2 games for Chicago after not getting a shot after his first 3 games. But the Revs, man, not winning again. They have not won a single game so far this season. They got Club America coming up. Not looking good, man.
It's brutal. It's not looking good, and I don't know what it is, because they've looked good in Champions League. Granted, they aren't playing top level competition. Like, I would say most of the MLS teams are better than...
You don't mean these random Honduran teams aren't...
I don't think it's up to the same level as a Chicago on a wet, rainy night, you know?
At Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they have a lot to figure out. And it's just, I think such a congested schedule doesn't really lend itself to helping them figure these things out, because they don't really get a time to iron things out in training. They're just going back-to-back games. But I think, honestly, they're probably going to lose out to Club America and then just have a down period in the league for maybe 2 more weeks, and then they'll probably come back after that.
That kind of feels like the trajectory when you see this CCL slump.
Is Caleb Porter on the hot seat now, or do they give him more time?
No, I don't think so yet. I mean, if he wins like the spoon somehow this season, sure. Wouldn't surprise me if they fire him. Even then, I don't know. But this... I'm always talking about how good this roster is, but things like this, I feel like, take time. They had a really bad off-the-field, you know, morale with the whole Bruce Arena firing and an investigation. They bring in Caleb Porter. They're juggling Champions League. They've got all these, like, rotating pieces that are going in, and the squad is getting older. I think they'll make the playoffs still, personally. I think this is a really talented team, but I don't think he's on the hot seat yet. I think there's only one man on the hot seat so far this year. Maybe two. Actually, I changed my mind. There's 2 people.
Do you think Giacomo Veroni sucks?
Some fan at Gillette Stadium did.
I texted you and our other buddy about this immediately. I was watching this game, and he missed, like, a lot of people thought it was, like, a pretty obvious, like, open shot to score, but like Ryan Spalding like breaks away and then just absolutely just laser beams across, that's like almost like above the crossbar, and Veroni like jumps up and gets something on it, and then it goes over the crossbar, which was, I'm surprised he got anything on it. It was absolutely just peppered in at him, and then the crowd is so empty, you could just hear everything everybody was saying. It's like sitting in a gym with like 10 people and everybody's just talking. You can basically hear everybody. And you just hear this one fan just go, "You suck, Veroni!" Just immediately, I just started laughing and just texted you guys, because I was like, this is such a weird MLS thing to have happen, I feel like.
It kind of felt like watching a... So, I started getting into MLS like 2011. This felt like watching, like, when I see old clips of like a 1999 like MLS game. Football stadium, half empty... mostly empty.
Yeah.
A draw, just like not a great game between two like not great teams right now. I mean, honestly, it's not a bad point for Chicago. Like, they should have won this game probably because of the goalkeeping mistake, and they were up, but point on the road, not terrible. But I want to move on. I don't really want to talk about that one that more. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, it's a sad one.
New York Red Bulls hosting Inter Miami. The Red Bulls win 4-0. Lewis Morgan gets a hat trick. Dante Venzier gets 4 assists. And where's Messi?
Off doing an interview about the World Cup. I don't know. This game was nuts. I was watching this game at first, and then I changed it to go to the Revs Chicago game. And after
that's a true MLS fan right there.
It was like 1-0, and then I changed it, and then the game popped off after that. But, yeah, absolutely crazy. Lewis Morgan announcing himself back. You know, he's the leader in the Golden Boot race now with 5 goals. I think he's tied with Dejan Jovetic. But absolutely crazy. They just kind of thrashed Miami on the counterattack. It felt like Miami just dominated possession this whole game, and then Red Bulls do what Red Bulls do, and they just kill you on the counterattack, really direct. Kept the ball on the ground, though. They didn't really just play long balls. They just kept it and kind of pinged it around on the ground and found their goals that way. But who do you think is your player of the match? Do you go with Van Zier or Lewis Morgan?
It's kind of tough. I'd give it to Morgan, but, I mean, four assists is not a... It's not anything to be scoffed at or taken lightly. Van Zier, yeah, the goals haven't really clicked like we thought it would last year. He was their big signing, but... huge so far. I mean, if Red Bulls get that Lewis Morgan, Van Zier, and then Emil Forsberg when he's back to like trio to be clicking, that's a pretty scary attack. And Forsberg with some off the field drama right now, but I love it. I mean, Lewis Morgan missed most of last year with injury, and then he scores a hat trick against his former team. You love to see it. For me, it's kind of what I said about with Miami last year. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I think when they lost last time. You're going to see these games where they don't have Messi or another star player. You see the games like Orlando where they blow out a team and look unstoppable. Then you're going to see these teams where they kind of get exposed and just get pounded.
Did you see Luis Suarez before this game started? There's like the video of him at the start of the game and the referee's like coming out with the ball, and he just looks like... when you put like a sweater on a dog, like he just was all like hunched over and he just had like, he's pulling his sleeves down, trying to like cover his hands up. He just looked miserable. It was like pouring down rain, and he just kind of like grabs the ball, like all like shyly from the ref, and just like sets it on the ground. Just looks like he did not want to be there at all.
That's brutal. You know, what was funny was Tom Bogert actually tweeted. He was at this game and he took a picture of Suarez, and he was like, Suarez looks absolutely miserable in the rain. Like, I guess that's not surprising when you come from Miami and lived in Uruguay and South America. Then all the comments were like, well, actually, Tom, he played in Liverpool. He's used to this. And every reply almost, Tom Bogart said, did I say he didn't play Liverpool? Did I say he didn't live in Liverpool? Which kind of cracked me up.
Yeah, I mean, we've lived in Oregon our whole life, but if I had to go stand out in the field while it poured down rain, I would probably be miserable too.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Big for the Red Bulls, right? I mean, they've had a good start to the year. They had a bad week last week, but kind of more rolling it back, kind of more what we expected from them after their start. So that's all I got to say.
Not too much else to say about this game. I agree. Like, you're going to see this from Miami, unfortunately. I mean, think of it what you will. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just... their schedule is so stacked full of games, and you're going to have these teams where this is like their big game. Like, a lot of these guys are going to turn up to play against Miami because it's their chance to shine against these guys that have been their idols growing up, you know? So fun to watch though.
Peter Stroud on Red Bulls was looking in the mirror and he saw like flashes of Busquets and love to see it. Charlotte hosting Columbus Crew. And Charlotte wins 2-0 at home. 2-0, Ashley Westwood. And this is just a crazy game, honestly. Columbus gets their first loss. There was about 15 minutes of second half or a first half stoppage time. You have a red card from Columbus, disallowed goals. It was just all over the place.
It was chaos. A pretty soft red card, in my opinion. I don't know if you saw the red card. Kind of soft.
Tough one.
Derek Jones coming in as like an emergency sub to fill in for like two other guys like being out, like international duty and then injury, and he steps in and then 26th minute, just a really unfortunate, like he kind of takes a touch with the outside of his foot and then steps around it to like shield it, and then as he's doing it he steps on the other guy, which is like 9 times out of 10 not a red card, but this ref decided it was a red card. And
yeah, it looked totally unintentional. Derek Jones as well, like this was his former team he was on last year, and he gets the start at his former club, maybe gets to show them what they're missing. Nope, red card in the 26th minute.
But that is brutal.
Yeah, Kucha with a disallowed goal, Charlotte had a disallowed goal, and I don't really know what to make of this, because I think if this matchup happens again 10 more times, I don't think Columbus would lose like this. I think this is just more, there's going to happen. There's going to be these games where like the game gets out of hand and these out of control factors happen, maybe that the ref or the crowd or the weather or things happen, but cool for Charlotte. Good for Dino.
Good for Charlotte. Not a huge red flag for Columbus. This is their first loss since November of last year. But cool for Charlotte. Patrick, I always butcher his name. Aguimang or something.
That's
I don't know.
Why I only said Westwood, man. I wasn't even going to try it.
He scored for them, and I don't know if you saw his interview. He's only 23. He was drafted by them, had a lights-out season for Crown Legacy. It's like their USL affiliate or their Big MLS club. Next Pro or whatever. He was lights-out for them, finally getting a chance this season. And he was interviewed afterwards and asked if he feels more confident playing for Dean Smith, if this coach is like giving him like more confidence. And he said he feels a lot of trust from Dean Smith and feels like he's improving a lot as a player under him, which I would never expect like a striker to say that about Dean Smith of all people, but good for him. Definitely. He felt good getting his first goal in front of 30,000 plus fans at home against the reigning champions. So, cool moment for him. Cool moment for Charlotte.
It's the big time moments that you live for. Next up, FC Cincinnati hosting NYCFC. Cincinnati gets a 1-0 win, getting back on track at home, especially picking up points. Lucho Acosta with the goal. And a solid, this is the sort of game that was like last year. They were winning these 1-0, these games they were supposed to win. And so far this year, it hasn't really worked like that.
Exactly. This is just what Cincinnati does. They grind out wins, and we haven't really seen it so far this year because their defense just hasn't looked quite the same, so they've had to rely on just scoring more than the other team. But their defense looks solid this game. Kip Keller stepping in, really leading this back line, you know.
Yeah, this was the best game I think from Luca Orellano, their new left wing back. He's come in and he was supposed to be like the like for Barreal who came in, but it really wasn't clicking in the same way. They weren't really playing positionally in the same manner, which doesn't have to be, but this is the game where he was like showing his most promise. He had one really great play where he just had a nasty cut and spin on one of the NYCFC players and just pings a ball from his own half past the halfway line to Bupenza, sends him clean through and goal. And then Bupenza pulls a MLS Eastern Conference Final against Columbus and just whiffs the shot right in the center of the goal, right at the goalkeeper, doesn't finish. But they win the game anyway, so.
Against a pretty poor NYC team. Like, this team just cannot figure out how to score goals.
Speaking of which, you said, is Caleb Porter on the hot seat? I said there's only two coaches on the hot seat. One in the East, one in the West. I think it's Nick Cushing in the East. I think he's the only guy who I can see getting fired soon.
Really?
In the Eastern Conference.
I can see that. Who would you say on the West?
Josh Wolf, Austin.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's been rough for New York. They just can't figure out how to score goals. I think they've scored the least amount of goals this year. They only have 3 goals in 5 games. Everybody else has more than that.
Even Seattle does. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, New York has 3 goals in 5 games. Chicago has, guess how many?
6.
9.
That's impressive.
Chicago has 9 goals.
I mean,
New York City has only scored 3 in 5 games.
I will say Seattle scored 4, but 3 of them are penalties, so.
That is true. Yeah, pretty poor from a team that I think everybody expects more of just because of the young talent they have. Just for whatever reason, they cannot figure out how to score a goal this season. So unfortunate for New York City, but I think they'll figure it out. They just need to get a striker in that team. But we'll move on. We got Orlando City SC 2-0 against Austin FC. They hosted Austin down in Orlando, and they just took care of business. Just not really like any surprise to anybody. Austin just looks poor this year. Orlando kind of trying to get back to their usual. They haven't looked their best, but starting to kind of look good. These are the games that you need to win to start building up that steam, and you need to win emphatically. You need to, like they did. I mean, the stats on this game. They had 22 shots to Austin's 3. That is insane.
Yeah, really, really big win for Orlando, especially considering they were a little shorthanded. They had Kyle Smith, their like backup kind of utility fullback, kind of pushing in the center of the park, playing a little bit of a defensive mid. They had Duncan McGuire out. They had Pedro Galese was out. And yeah, just taking care of business against a team they should beat. But once again, they haven't really had a good start. They were struggling to score goals. And Austin, man, I was reading an MLS.com article about this team, and they were just one of the like match recaps. I think it was Matt Doyle's. It was just saying Austin just looks like the wooden spoon contender already. There's nothing like of highlight. Even with some of these other worse, crappier teams, there's no like glaring positive.
It looks bad. And I'm looking at their lineup right now. They had only 5 subs on the bench. They used 4 of them. The only sub they didn't use was their keeper sub, which was Stephen Cleveland. They just don't have any depth to this team, and even like the starting 11 isn't amazing. Like, it'd be a different story if their starting 11 was really good and they didn't have depth. I would think that people would be a little bit more excited about them, but there isn't really anybody on this team that excites me or would make their way into most other teams besides Driussi. But even then, I think his stock has gone it's gone down so much. I wouldn't even say he's top 5 tens in the league. Top 10 for like center attacking mid.
All of their best players have majorly regressed from their form like 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
John Gallagher, maybe the lone exception. He's been pretty solid as a fullback lately when he's been converted. But Rubio, O'Brien, Valencia, Driussi, Ethan Finley, Alexander Ring, Matt Hedges, Brad Stuver, like those were all guys maybe like 4 years ago, 3 years ago. You'd be like, all right, this is a solid team. This is all right.
They're doing like a roster build of like other teams in MLS, but like the worst version of it, kind of like a Nashville. Like they're trying to pick up like this proven MLS talent, but they're getting guys like Matt Hedges and Jossi Zardes who just aren't good MLS players anymore. Like, I feel like both those guys should be playing in USL.
Even the Rapids have done this better lately,
which is really sad to say. It's kind of sad that like that's been Austin's big signings and everything just hasn't really clicked for them. So I don't know. If I was Austin, I think I would probably get rid of my coach before New York City does.
I think Wolf. Yeah, I agree. I think Wolf is on the hot seat because he's been here the entire time of Austin FC's history. Yeah. They hired him before they started, and they had one good year. They had one good year in 2022. They had a great year, to be fair. They made it to the conference finals, lost deservedly so, but lost to a really stacked LAFC team. But other than that, they haven't made the playoffs. They haven't looked good other than for like small like bursts.
And they absolutely, that one year they were good, they defied every statistic. They just absolutely overperformed in every possible way. But yeah, if I was Austin, I would let go of Wolf at this point because I think it's just, it's not working. I mean, at least with New York City, they have like, Their midfield play is really good. They're really good with the ball and can develop like an attack. They just can't finish anything. So there's a lot more to build on there with Nick Cushing than there is with Owen Wolf at Austin, where it just seems like they've run out of ideas after like one good season.
The battle of mid right there. Austin and New York City. Yeah, rough. I mean, honestly, feel bad for both of those fans. Honestly, It's tough to see your team just flailing and wandering about with no business, no hope yet. I mean, like we said, what's up?
Can't relate.
NYCFC looks better out of the two, but we'll move on. Toronto hosting Atlanta, another game we both predicted. You thought Atlanta was winning. I had Toronto winning 2-1, but they won 2-0, so I got the result right. And big win. Big win at home for Toronto over a solid Atlanta team. Would you call this a statement win?
For Toronto?
Yep.
Absolutely, if Lorenzo Insigne didn't get injured in the process. I don't know what the extent of that injury is, but if he's out for any amount of time, I think this team's going to probably have. I think they're gonna. Their momentum's gonna slow down a bit. They've been red hot. This is a big win for them against a really good team. But I still just see the momentum falling off at some point. It doesn't seem sustainable. Everybody, it's kind of like how Austin was a few years ago. Like,
right,
everybody's firing on all cylinders, and that's great. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be sustainable for the full season.
True. Important to know too. Atlanta with some notable absences, most notably Giakoumakis and Almada. It's international break, but I don't know. The win, obviously, the result, huge. But to me, when I saw, it's the clip that went around, but it's like Insigne and Bernadeschi, and they're like back healing to each other, and they're like that flair they had in like 2022 when they first got here, and they were just lighting it up, but then it just all went away. The joy got sucked out. Bob Bradley was too strict with his policies of not vaping on planes for Bernadeschi, and then there was just a lot of tension, a lot of anger, and now it seems like the chains are off on these guys. I don't know what the heck John Herdman did, but I'm big on Toronto because they haven't had that. They've had kind of a tough schedule to start. They've had Atlanta. They had at Cincinnati to start the year, at the Revs, which at the time wasn't, you know, the easiest matchup. Maybe it is looking back now, but I'm big on Toronto.
Yeah, they've looked good, but I think you hit an important note there, and like this was not the Atlanta team you think of when you think of Atlanta. They were missing most of their guys, and even like John De Silva didn't start. So even the guys that they had there, I'm looking at their starting 11. Most of these guys don't normally start for them. This is a weird kind of hodgepodge like squad for them. Maybe they went into it. It's an away game. They didn't take it as serious. Maybe they thought they could still handle the business. I don't know, but I wouldn't take too much away from Atlanta here because they lost to Toronto on the road.
Yeah, for me, it's less about like Atlanta being poor and you're not doing this, but more Toronto, and so far consistently showing good things, good results. But we'll move on. Vancouver Whitecaps hosting RSL. You know, we called this the Demir Krylock derby. And then the 33rd minute, Demir Krylock scores against his former club. It's a big moment. It's one of those moments that it's like Frank Lampard scoring for City against Chelsea. And it's awkward. Nobody likes it. It just doesn't feel right.
Compare Vancouver Whitecaps to Manchester City?
Maybe. Is that disrespectful? And RSL comes back, though, 2-1. We both were on to something. We both predicted a big Vancouver win in our last episode, but we had a disclaimer saying, this is like a classic game. RSL is just like losing, and then they steal the game like in the second half on the road. We said that. I even said Julio is going to score, and he did. But huge result for RSL. This is what RSL does, I feel like.
They want everybody to just not. They want to be the underdog so bad that they lower the expectations so that they can come out and defy them. Yeah, this is a great game from them. I mean, they dominated possession, had far more shots, almost three times as many shots. Yeah, great game for RSL to come out and just dominate a pretty good Vancouver team that's been in form.
I was going to say, Vancouver's been doing great so far, and you're right. RSL does this thing where they'll look amazing, you know, 1 week, and then the next week, they'll lose at home to Colorado Rapids. They'll, you know, all these little things. They'll draw against Salt Lake. They'll do these things where, like, you're like, all right, this is why I don't take RSL seriously. Then they'll get these scrappy road wins. So,
you know what excites me most about this game is the way the Western Conference looks. This kind of just puts it into perspective for me. It's been really interesting seeing how it's shaped, like Western Conference has like shaped itself so far. Eastern Conference isn't too much of a surprise aside from like Toronto and Red Bulls, but Western Conference is like mixing up a lot from what a lot of people thought. Galaxy look really good. RSL's kind of having these moments. Vancouver's look good. And then on the other end, you have like Seattle down in the dumps. Austin's down where they everybody kind of expects them. I don't know. I like seeing these kind of results because it's just it makes the Western Conference more exciting to me. It's not like cut and dry like a lot of people thought it might have been.
To me, the West is completely unpredictable. Minus San Jose and Austin. Those two teams, I don't expect to make the playoffs. Any other team I can legitimately see making the playoffs and making it maybe so high as even like that fifth seed.
Yeah, it's up for grabs completely. That's what I love about it. I think that's why, for me, like, yeah, the Eastern Conference is probably stronger, but I'm more interested in watching the Western Conference like throughout the season because I feel like you're going to see these weird, crazy results that, like, the team that's down and out all of a sudden, like, wins three games in a row, and then they're back up above the playoff line, and it's going to be fun watching this kind of shape up throughout the season. I'd like to look at one of those graphs, like, later on where it, like, shows the positions of each team. It'd be kind of interesting watching the Western Conference and see how many times, like, teams, like, go up and down on the standings.
Right, yeah. The West is truly, like, an unpredictable commodity right now. So, exciting to see, exciting to keep an eye on as the season progresses. More Western Conference action. Sporting Kansas City hosting the LA Galaxy. The Galaxy wins 3-2 on the road. And my goodness, Kansas City just threw this game away. They got their first win last week. They go up 2-0 within 10 minutes at the end of the first half. And then in an 8-minute span from the 72nd minute to the 80th, they concede three goals. The Galaxy flips the result. They even had a disallowed goal to the Galaxy, so things could have been worse, and they just... This was one of the more epic, like, bottle jobs I've ever seen. It was so quick when this all happened. It was unreal.
Felt like some FIFA scripting. Like, the game, like, you're up, like, you're in control, everything feels fine, you're playing at home, and then all of a sudden the game just turns upside down, and you just... You're so confused, like you don't know what's going on, like you feel like you're slower than the other team all of a sudden. That's what happened here. Like LA Galaxy, like a switch flipped. It's almost like they waited until like the 70th minute to just start just annihilating. Like Eric Zavaleta gets off, you know, gets him off the mark with kind of a scrappy, like weird, like Ricky Pooj just shielding the ball off a cornered like cross or something. It was just weird. Like he kind of shielded it and then poked it back to Zavaleta.
I feel better as a Timbers fan because he scored those two goals against Portland last year, and all the stats were like, wow, Zavaleta hasn't scored in five seasons.
He right. scored twice against the Timbers.
Now against Kansas City. Yeah, if you look at these stats, it's not even, at least on paper, I know when you watch the game it tells a different story, but Kansas City didn't have bad stats. They had double the shots, better XG, possession is... about even, pretty dang close, but it's just letting a game fall apart at home, especially that quickly. The defense just was lost, and the midfield could not control this game. So, huge, huge win for the Galaxy.
Not what you'd expect from a Peter Vermees SKC team either. Usually they're so good on the ball, and they're just so capable of just killing a game by just dominating possession. So, kind of sad to see that happen to them, but fun to see Galaxy kind of flying again.
It is. It's kind of... And this is a team I don't really like, you know, per se, and I know you don't, but it is... Something feels almost right when the Galaxy are not just, you know, Austin FC levels of poor.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Galaxy fan by any means, but I almost have, like, grown a little bit fonder of them because most of their fan base has left them for the newer, shinier team in L.A.,
Yeah, if you're a Galaxy fan now, still, you're not plastic.
It's kind of like the same thing with both the New York teams. Like, if I had to pick one, I'd pick the Red Bulls just because they're the OG. They were there first. They didn't lose their market to this new, more expensive team that came in. And
they didn't beat the Timbers.
Kind of just bought a fan base.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I completely agree. I would say the same. We're going to move on the biggest match of the weekend. The Jared Stroud Derby, St. Louis City hosting DC United, another prediction game. I said St. Louis was coming away with a victory here. I was wrong. Chase was right, however. He got the score wrong, but it ended up being a draw. 2-2. No Jared Stroud goal, though.
After he popped off against Miami last week. Yeah, kind of what I expected from this. I didn't see it as high of scoring, but two teams that, in my opinion, are pretty fairly matched. Not too different in their style of play either. But yeah, I mean, kind of what you'd expect from this game. A lot of chances created, not the best defense on either side. Good attacking pieces on both sides, exciting young players on both sides, old veterans on both sides. It's two teams that match up well and provide a good game of soccer. Nothing too flashy or crazy about it. And 2-2 result feels about right.
That's all I got to say.
there's not too much else to say about it. Did you see Samuel Dinneren has interest from Europe, though?
I saw it. The Norwegian League offered $1 million for him, which
I think St. Louis turned that down, but there's still, from what I've heard, two or three other teams that have interest in him in Europe. So
yeah,
cool to see that, like, that caliber of player in MLS is, like, getting attraction, like, getting, you know, looks from Europe now, because before, a guy like that would just be an MLS lifer.
Right. And
which I love. I have nothing wrong. I would love nothing more than in 15 years to be talking about the journeyman that is Samuel Adeniran and all the teams he played at.
No, I completely agree. I think credit to St. Louis for one, I'd say taking a chance on him, but he's 25. He's not young per se, but taking a talent in Adeniran that, you know, wasn't exactly a proven commodity at the MLS level, playing him, developing him, helping him reach his talent, but then also turning down a bid that they feel like they could get more from, because I think right now that bid doesn't really match his value and they could get something better down the road.
I would agree. I think he's probably valued at least like a double that, at least $2 million, somewhere around there. So it makes sense for them to turn it down, but at the same time, it was kind of surprising because it's just pure profit for them, and I feel like they could still hit on another signing. He's not an amazing player. I think they could turn that money into something better.
Right. No, I agree too. But we're going to move on to a bit of a wild game here. Colorado Rapids hosting Houston Dynamo, and it ends up being 1-0 for the Dynamo on the road. Two wins in a row, 2 1-0s in a row after being winless before this. And
this one's a little controversial, though.
It was with a 96th minute winner at the death by Brad Smith.
Who else but Brad Smith just to curl it home at the end of the game to kill your hopes and dreams?
I get nightmares of that guy as a Timbers fan from Houston last year.
Oh, man. Did you see the whole, like, build-up to that last goal, though, and the controversy around it and everything?
I saw the goal, but I didn't.
So, like, before that counterattack happened, a ball's whipped in, and it's not really, like, a foul or anything, like a penalty or anything for Colorado in the other box, but there's a player, I don't remember who it was, but he goes down with, like, a head injury. Like, it's hit in the head, and he goes down holding his head. And the ref waves play on, and they go down the other end on a counterattack and score the winner in the 96th minute. And that's kind of where the controversy comes from, because technically with head injuries, you're supposed to stop the game immediately. I saw videos of it afterwards where he's like going up and talking to the ref, and he just has like a swollen like black eye already, and definitely was contact there, but I don't know.
That's tough, because I say that's definitely on the ref, because you're right. Head injuries should... The ref's supposed to automatically stop. It's not like a play on or where, you know, the team's, you know, sporting respect comes into play. I don't really blame Houston for playing on and just making the best of that situation. That should be the ref's call, though.
Yeah, you could see Chris Armas didn't look too upset. I mean, obviously he's upset his team got scored on, but he didn't look like too upset with Houston. I mean, when the coaches went and shook hands after the game, Ben Olsen, you could kind of read his lips. He's like, he's saying sorry, you know, he's admitting that, you know, there was something the ref probably should have stopped the game there, which I think is huge from him, you know, considering he's on the winning end of that controversial situation. But Chris Armas didn't look too upset, just shook his hand, kind of wished him luck, and then went on his way. So
I think that's classy from both coaches, because we all know certain coaches in the league. Sartini, PV, Caleb Porter.
That's a Bruce Arena just light the stadium on fire moment in the press conference afterwards.
No, I like that, though. I like that from Olsen. I like that from Armas. Olsen admitting that, yeah, in a different scenario, in a different kind of replayed version of that, that, yeah, they could have played it out if they would have caught it. But then also Chris Armas, you know, not holding that against him, realizing that these are guys who are competing, fighting for every inch. So,
especially against a team in your own conference where that those 3 points are going to be huge later in the season.
Right. Respect for both coaches, though. They're my legends of the week.
Respect to those guys. Let's move on to a much more lopsided game. LAFC putting the beat down on poor Nashville, 5-0. Gary Smith out. This is how do you play a defensive counterattacking style and then lose 5-0?
Including your goalkeeper getting a red card.
That was not even on like a hard tackle or anything, just making a save outside of
outside his box. Of the box.
I don't understand that. Like, I get like if you're I don't understand it. Like, at that point his team was already 3-0 down. He decided to try and run out of the box to get a ball. Misjudged how fast the attacker was, and then for whatever reason decided to make the save about like 2 feet outside of his box.
Yeah, this game's already done and dusted, but now their starting goalkeeper is out next week. Embarrassing. Yeah, 5-0 is rough. What do we call this derby, Chase? What do we call the LAFC Nashville derby? There's only one player I can think of
that's gone between teams.
It's a big player. The Walker Zimmerman Classico.
I forgot Walker Zimmerman was at LAFC for like 2 seasons.
Yeah, first 2 years. Rough from Nashville. This is embarrassing. This is a terrible loss. I don't think they're going Gary. I mean, the fans probably are, but I don't think this FO is looking at this. And
I feel like they need to. Like,
this, I agree they should be.
That's terrible. Like, you're playing a defense first counterattacking style, and then you get forced into a game where you have more possession and you lose 5-0 because you don't know what to do with the ball.
Timbers, Houston.
You don't know what to do with the ball, so when you have it, you just make these poor mistakes, you draw your team out of position, and then you just end up getting absolutely thrashed. It was just poor on every level from Nashville, and honestly, I don't feel too bad for them. Like, I feel bad for their fans that they have to be put through this style of soccer, which it's great in Leagues Cup when you're getting these results and you're winning and you're in a cup final, but every single week in the league, you have to sit and watch this style of play, and then you come up against a team that does this to you. It's like, what is the point of our style of play if this is the result we're going to get?
It's a fair point. Where is all this money from Nashville's ownership, their celebrity owners that they bring in, and MLS loves to post about how they have Giannis, the basketball, the Greek freak. They have, I think, Reese Witherspoon is a part of their ownership group. All these celebrities will, like, they'll trot them out, like, give them the scarf. They'll take a PK in the stadium.
You know, Reese Witherspoon's real bought into this team, and she's calling for Gary Smith's head right now.
Just for them to just make a big move of, like, Drew Yearwood. Just they get all these former Red Bulls, like, midfielders.
You're telling me you're not excited about Mackenzie Gaines?
Mackenzie Gaines. I mean, Tyler Boyd was a decent signing, but, like, you're right. And I was higher on this team before, but
I'm not high, and I've made my opinion of this team very clear. I think they're...
You've been on it for a while, so...
I do not like Nashville. I do not like the way they play. I think they have... I like their players. I love Hani Mukhtar, but for me, worst style of soccer in the league by far. I would rather watch Austin play.
That's brutal, man. That's a really brutal statement, but we're going to move on. Our beloved Portland Timbers... We're in action Saturday night, hosting the Philadelphia Union. Jonathan Rodriguez debut. Philadelphia steals the show, ruins the party. 3-1 win on the road in Portland with only five players on the bench, six players.
Brutal. Yeah, I see a lot of people saying this is like a wake-up call, like bringing the Timbers back down to earth. Because, I mean, we had such a hot start to the season, but I don't know. I disagree. It's kind of like you said before. Like, this is what it probably felt like for a lot of teams when Gio would take the Timbers on the road and, you know, just kind of grab some points and run. Timbers dominated possession in this game. They're missing their starting goalkeeper. They're missing Kamal Miller.
Starting left back as well.
Missing Bravo. So Eric Miller definitely was the weak point in our defense. I mean, the first goal Julian Carranza scores, that's his guy. He should be winning that header. Second goal, just falls asleep. Pantemis like palms it out, and Eric Miller isn't awake and just lets Quinn Sullivan run past him and score a goal. So definitely not the best performance from a guy who's supposed to be like your stay-at-home, like defensive, like outside back. Who,
right, he's not supposed to give you those mistakes. He's supposed to be like a 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah, he's solid. He's supposed to be the solid guy that doesn't make those mistakes, yet he went out and absolutely made those mistakes. But I don't know. I'm still biased. I'm pretty high on this Timbers team. I think there's still a lot of hope for them. It's just getting these pieces back. Felipe Mora coming back, I think that's huge. Jonathan Rodriguez, after only being with the team for 4 days, starts the game, plays the entire game. So and bags a goal. Bags a goal in his debut. And yeah, I think there's a lot of promise here. We have two good quality strikers now that Felipe Mora is back. Jonathan Rodriguez is going to be great. I mean, Williamson coming back into form, getting healthy again. Evander, just typical Evander, like hot and cold. I think once we get Kamal Miller back in that back line, and then Crepeau back there, because Pantemis looked good, but I think Crepeau probably would have stopped that second goal from happening. Probably wouldn't have palmed it away. Probably would have saved it, and I don't know. Maybe directed the back line a little better. There's a lot of what ifs there, but at the end of the day, this is a Philadelphia team that is still really good, and they've just had a slow start to the season.
Right. All credit to Philly, because I don't think this is a... There was poor moments from Portland, but this is just more Philly taking their chances and Portland not. If Portland bags a goal or two in the first half, I think this game plays out completely different, but that's Philly, man. They're professional. They've had the most points in the league since 2018. They've been solid, so well done.
You know what I love to see in this game, though? That my one real bright spot was watching Santi Moreno just kind of terrorize like Kai Wagner and Jack Elliott for good portions of the game. Just getting on the ball and just kind of like slaloming through like two of the best, like probably one of the best like back lines in the entire league. And he just kind of, he made it look effortless at a lot of the time. So
that's our star boy.
That's our star boy right there. Let's move on, though.
My second favorite team, San Jose Earthquakes, picks up their first win of the year because they were playing the Seattle Sounders, and San Jose won 3-2. This is a wild game. San Jose goes up in the 42nd minute. 1 minute later, they score a second goal, and it's called off for offsides initially, and then VAR comes back to give the goal. I remember I watched this. San Jose scored the first one. I'm like, yes. I was at a game night with some friends. And then they score their second goal, and I just burst out laughing just because it was just like a tap-in goal. It was like, this is not happening right now to Seattle. Losing to the Quakes, who haven't won a game. Anyway, we go to the second half. Seattle gets another penalty kick. A little soft, I won't lie. I'm a Timbers fan. I'm not afraid to admit that, but they capitalize, and then Musovski has a nice header. They tie it up, 2-2. They bring it back. Not even a minute later, San Jose runs down the other end of the field. Seattle's caught asleep. Jeremy Bobesy scores. San Jose gets 3 goals, 3 points. They hang on. Huge result for them. But Seattle, down in the mud.
Worst team in the West. Second worst team in the entire league right now.
Their worst start ever in MLS play.
Do you think Brian Schmetzer is cooking something up right now?
Like a plan?
He's stuck with the 4-4-2. It's that something they never did before. He's sticking with it. But does this just to me just reeks of like a Seattle, like, just for whatever reason they start grinding out 1-0 like PK, like free kick, like cross header goal wins. Just, I feel like this is just, I really hope not.
Chase isn't ready to give in, but I am. I've been ready for the last 2 years.
I really hope you're right. I really want to see the Seattle fall off. And it has been the worst ever start for them. But for whatever reason, I could just feel like in a year's time, I'm going to every Reddit thread, every comment on every MLS post is going to be like, everybody counted us out, but look at us now. We won the MLS Cup. Like, it's just a bunch of neckbeard marching band, like sound wall, like weirdos up in Seattle are just going to be rubbing it in my face that they had this terrible start and then came back and won.
Hey man, it's the sound wave. You're pulling up Brian Schmetzer.
sound wall.
Hey, I know what you mean, but you got to let go, man.
This is they're gonna win like the U.S. Open Cup or something, and then that's
because there's only five MLS teams in it this year because the league is.
They're not gonna lose to Burrito FC. We haven't even talked about that U.S. Open.
We're not gonna at all.
You're just ignoring it. Wow. You're just gonna comply with MLS and only talk about MLS games and ignore this injustice that is the U.S. Open Cup.
Would it kill us to talk about something else once in a while? No, maybe it's because I watch a lot of respect to Rave Green TV. That's a channel I enjoy watching, like dedicated MLS,
your
like
Seattle
media,
twin
media accounts. My Seattle twin. I like the Orlando Fan TV. I like the DNVR Rapids group. There's some
the Orlando Fan TV is unhinged.
I like seeing dedicated content like that because you never used to a while ago, or it wasn't as high quality as it is now. But that guy's been saying back since like the last half of 2021 that your Seattle was just killing it. They had like six all-star starters. They were top of the West the whole year almost, and then something just changed. Something just wasn't clicking, and then it culminated with them losing in the playoffs at home to RSL in the first round. 2022, they won the Champions League. They put it together for that, but the regular season just didn't work. It didn't click. They missed the playoffs. And then even last year, they started off really hot, but it's been this same issue where scoring goals, and they have this like directionless play almost where they're stretching the field vertically, but it's just like possession without a purpose. And then they cross in these hopeful balls. Rui Diaz doesn't look himself. Jordan Morris looks like a shell of his former self. But then, unlike previous seasons, where they had like a best 11, best defense in the league pretty much, their back line has just been making these terrible mistakes. I mean, every San Jose goal last week, this result, was due to Yamar or Jackson Reagan especially just getting melted. Nuhu being completely lost. Alex Roldan previous weeks makes these runs and has these poor lapses of judgment. I think it's done. Seattle is gone. See you later.
You know what would be my take on it? Where I would agree with you that what I think has changed in Seattle and what I've noticed and what isn't necessarily a bad thing, but they need to find their balance, is they've become so reliant and have committed so much to their academy. They have so many academy graduates in this lineup, and that's awesome, and I love to see it. They're giving chances to these guys, but at the same time, the more they bring in those guys, the less it feels like they have that magic and that spark. Like when Rui Diaz was younger, when they had a Lodeiro, you know, like those were the guys that brought that spark, and I haven't seen that from any of these academy graduates. They're bringing in like a team full of just like role players, which is, it's fine to have. Like all these academy guys are great, and I would honestly love to have something like that at the Timbers, but it's almost like they saw success and they got all this praise around the league that they're bringing in all these academy graduates, all these guys, and then you look at their lineup now and they have Jordan Morris doesn't really produce anything. Christian Roldan, great role player, doesn't really produce anything in the attack. Just looking at their most recent like lineup, like Sota Kitahara, like great role player, doesn't produce a ton. Obed Vargas, great role player. He didn't play in this last game, but Obed Vargas, you know, Paul Rothrock, Cody Baker, like these are all guys that are great role players, but none of them have that like Lodeiro magic or anything like that. And that's what De La Vega was probably meant to do. And then now they're without him and they don't have any other players that can provide that for them.
Yeah. And they have had a lot of injuries, but I mean, all these teams have injuries. And I think I sort of agree with the academy thing. I think that's more twofold, because they have Danny Leyva, Obed Vargas, Josh Atencio. They've got all these great midfielders, but usually if Giampaolo's there, if Rusnak's healthy, a lot of these guys aren't starting or getting real minutes, but then they're also not selling them off. So it's like they're kind of stuck in this purgatory where they're not really getting the full developmental minutes they can be, but then they're also not giving them full time. Cody Baker-Williams, is that his name? Cody Baker-Whitten?
I think it's just Cody Baker.
Cody Baker, he looked all right off the bench in this game. I don't know. I think it's just an old guard, and they have a lot of players who had great reputations, but that hasn't carried over into this season. And they're one guy, like you said, who is supposed to be the next star role magical player. For one, they signed him knowing he has an injury history, and then they kind of brought him onto the field and kind of rushed him almost in their second game. Now he's out injured again. So it's just one of those things where I feel like they should have been making these moves a while ago, and they're holding on to these legacy players too long, I think.
It feels like where the Timbers were like a year or two ago. Like their DP spots, who even are their DPs? Like they have De La Vega now.
Rusnak is one.
That's a rough DP spot to have.
And then Rui Diaz is still their a DP for them.
See, I keep going back to it, but like I look at their roster and there's not a single guy in this roster that has that spark. Like almost every successful team in this league has like a honeymoon, like the Hani Mukhtar, when Austin was good, Driussi was amazing for them, the Reynoso, the Carlos Hewell, like they have the one guy that just provides like everything. Like that's what the Timbers relied so heavily on Valeri for so long. It's just they don't have a guy that does that for them.
It's really interesting, too, because this is on paper, once again, a roster everybody was saying is top team in the best team in the West, or at worst, and second or third.
It's such a deep roster.
It's so deep.
Then they get a few injuries, and everybody's like, well, they've had a lot of injuries.
And that's what the MLS.com staff is saying. But the problems look deeper than that to me. I don't know if they missed the playoffs. I had them in seventh. I really wanted them to say I want them to miss the playoffs, but I didn't want to be too much of a hater. But I think we're seeing collectively the signs that, once again, Rave Green TV, my evil Sounders twin, he was on it. He said there's a lot more deeper issues here. As a Timbers fan, I mean, we used to pray for times like this, so I hope it continues. So that's going to do it, though.
That's every game.
That's every game. A nice little Seattle rant. We're going to do a quick couple games and then be out of here. We're liking this shorter format. You don't have to dedicate 4.5 hours to listen to the MLS Net Boys show. Short and sweet. That's how we do it now. Sometimes.
For now, at least. We got a couple quizzes for each other. I told Jacob we're going to do quizzes. I'm steering clear of Sporkle because I have the worst luck ever whenever I pick a quiz on there. So I came up with my own. I don't know what Jacob came up with. We kept it secret from each other. You want to go first? You want to quiz me first?
Yes. I've got... All right. I'll do it. So I've got a list of the top 30 goal scorers in MLS history. This was up to date up until the start of this season. So,
top
possibility.
Top 30, what was it again? Say again.
Goal scorers in MLS history. And what I'm going to do is there is at least five players on this list that were playing up until last season. Still active, yet to retire. We're on a roster last season, that recently. I want you to name five at least players who were on this list, who were on an MLS roster last season.
That are within the top 30, you said?
Yes. Okay. Top 30.
easiest one, I'm going to get it out of the way. Kai Kamara.
Kai Kamara is on the list, yet still not on an MLS roster this year. Played last season in Chicago.
Is that number? Is he have to be rostered this year? Or you said last year.
Just up to last year.
Okay. Top 30 goal scorers of all time.
Kai Kamara's number 2 with 144.
I was going to say, I know he's way up there. Give me Joseph Martinez.
Martinez.
I think he sneaks in there.
He is on the list with 105 goals. He's in the top 10.
That's insane.
So that's 2.
I only really knew that because recently he like said he's angling for that like top goal scorer record in MLS, which yeah. I don't think he gets there, but
he's about 50 goals off, so... I mean,
man's going to put up some Fernando Adi numbers real quick if he wants to get there. Is Lionel Messi on the list? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. So I got Joseph Martinez, Kai Kamara, rostered as of last year, top 30 goal scorer in the league. That's tough. Those are the two easiest ones that I could think of. I'm trying to think of some other guys that are really prolific. Up until last year. Give me Hani Mukhtar.
Mukhtar is not on the list, actually.
Really? I guess he probably puts up more just goal contributions.
He's close, I bet. The bottom number on this list is 76 goals. So he's probably going to be there if he sticks around in MLS, which we expect the next couple seasons, next few.
Dang. All right, so give me strike one on that. That's strike one.
Strike one. You get 3 strikes, so...
Dang it. You've I could have swore Hani Mukhtar had like a couple seasons that would have put him there.
You've got Kai Kamara. You've got Joseph Martinez.
How did I space Carlos Vela?
Carlos Vela.
He has to be on there. How did a man put up like 30 goals in one season and not be there?
I don't see him on this list.
No way. How many goals does he have in his MLS career?
Let me fact check this because he was one I expect to be on here.
Because he had 2 insane seasons.
He's got 78 goals in all competitions.
Okay, so not just... this is going just purely MLS.
Purely MLS goals. So he,
dang.
Once again, very, very close, but just not missing quite. Out.
Hmm. You know who I really want to say, but I know it's not right? So I'm not. This isn't my guess, but my mind immediately went to Maxi Urruti because he just like the.
That's what your heart says.
Just the longevity of his career, but I think he's like never scored more than like 10 goals a season. Like maybe like that's been like his peak is like a couple seasons over 10 goals, so it just doesn't add up to like that 76 like threshold.
Right.
Hmm. Who else could be up there that was rostered still last year? Blanco was still technically rostered last year, but I don't think he ever scored that many goals. He wouldn't be in there. Reynoso has a lot of goals, but not that many.
There's a couple like obvious ones, and then there's a couple like sneak ones that you would like. It makes sense, but it's not somebody you would think of.
Huh. I'm trying to think. Whenever we do these like quizzes, my mind always blanks, like trying to think of like...
It's tough being on the spot.
Like prolific goal scorers in MLS.
Because this is something me and Chase will do in a party chat. Just like...
Sit here and just spitball this
remember,
kind of stuff.
You remember this guy who scored 12 goals in 2019?
I want to say there's a lot of guys that are coming to mind just because of like their longevity, but it's like... All the guys that are coming to mind, I don't think of... That's a lot of goals. That's a lot of goals to score.
Right. So, yeah, the bottom, the floor is 76 goals.
That's crazy.
So, at least 76 goals.
At least 76. I'm trying to just go through the teams last year and think, like...
Yep.
So, you got... There's just so many new names in MLS, like, every season now, especially in, like, the attacking positions. It's, like, hard to think who's, like, been here for a while that could rack up that many goals.
So you've got Kai Kamara, Joseph Martinez is 2 correct, and then you've missed on Vela and Hani Mukhtar.
I'm already at 2 strikes. I can't go out this early. This is tough. Because my heart says Maxi Urruti. My heart says Johnny Russell. My heart, you know, it's like...
The legends.
The legends of the game. I'm just going through teams and I'm thinking of strikers and I'm just already eliminating like Not Felipe Mara. Not Alan Pulido. My Siri watch was listening to me. My Siri watch. What? I sound like an old person. What the heck? Oh, man. Not Dante Van Zier. Like, there's just so many new names that it's like hard to think.
Right.
I'm trying, and I keep going back to the same teams. Like, my mind is running in circles here.
I'll give you the goal total. 82 goals.
82?
For one of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Higher on the list, we've got one who's on a roster right now. I'll give you. He has 103 goals.
And he's rostered currently.
He's currently rostered. He's on a Western Conference team.
Was Ola Kamara still playing last season?
He's on this list with 81 goals, but he's not currently.
He wasn't rostered last year. Dang. That would have been 2 years ago. That's crazy. Ola Kamara had that many goals in MLS.
A lot of goals for three different teams. Galaxy, Columbus Crew, DC United. I'll give you some more hints.
Oh, wait.
Because...
Oh, no. I don't... Okay, give me a hint.
So, next on this list, 103 goals, was on a roster last year, is currently on a roster this year still. He's in the Western Conference. He plays in Texas.
In Texas. Blas Perez. I'm just kidding. Oh, man. Oh, no. I'm trying to think. It's not Giassi Zardes?
Giassi Zardes has 103 MLS goals.
I guess
goals.
That makes sense because he's been around forever.
Since 2013. Yeah.
So, yeah, across a decade, it's kind of easy to rack. I mean, I don't want to say it's easy, but when you're consistently starting.
Right.
That's crazy.
Another one. I didn't expect this player to have. So right now you've got Kai Kamara, Joseph Martinez, Giassi Zardes. We'll do two more. This one is surprising. He has 90 goals currently.
Is he still playing?
He was on a roster last season. He has not been picked up this year. Last season, he was on Toronto FC / Nashville. He got traded from Nashville to Toronto.
Oh, no. I swear I could remember. I can't. Oh, is it CJ Sapong?
CJ Sapong.
He has 90 goals?
CJ Sapong has 90 MLS goals.
I only ever remember that guy just being bang average. I would have never guessed CJ Sapong. That's crazy.
Yeah, 110 games for Sporting Kansas City. He had 123 for Philadelphia, 43 for Chicago, 74 for Nashville, 20 for Toronto FC. 90 goals in MLS league play.
That is crazy.
Just barely missing out on the cut. Dom Dwyer has 86 MLS goals, but he wasn't on an MLS. He hasn't been on an MLS roster since 2022, actually.
That's sad.
Kind of crazy. Last up on this list, going just based off of just purely who is in the league. This is actually, hold on. This is a tie almost because I'm not sure if this player was in MLS last year. He was. Okay. All right. This player, last season, 86 goals total. Not just last season.
Last season.
In
Man
his career.
Put up like the highlight messy year. Like.
In his career, 86 goals. Last played in MLS 2023 in the Eastern Conference. He has played for three different MLS clubs. His most recent stint was being loaned in Mexico for a short stint.
Jozy Altidore
has 86 goals.
He was rostered last year?
He was rostered on the New England Revolution.
Oh, I...
Barely.
That's why I didn't say him, because I didn't think he was actually rostered last year. I thought they got rid of him before the year started.
He was bought out on June 15th of last season. So he started he was traded there in 2022, and then finished that year, was loaned out mid-season in that first year to Mexico, and then didn't even make it to the halfway point of last year. Still vying for a club. Last two that I actually had on this list, both former Seattle players. One with 82 goals was on Seattle last season.
Oh, shoot. What's his... Montero.
Freddy Montero. 82 goals for Seattle.
Dang.
And then with 76 goals in his MLS career, played for Seattle, Houston, and Austin. just retired after last season.
And Austin. Oh, what's his name? Is it Chad White or Chad? What was his name? Chad Barrett or?
Not him. Similar profile.
That guy
though.
Also went to Texas afterwards, right?
Similar profile.
Really? Who is it? What?
Will Bruin.
Oh.
Will Bruin retired last season.
Just the random, like, B-grade American dude that went from Seattle somewhere else.
He's tied at the bottom. So he tied for 30th for most goals in MLS history. 76 goals. Montero had 82. You know what makes me happy? Diego Valeri, as a number 10 attacking midfielder, 85 goals. Pretty
That's
high
crazy.
On this list. What a legend. That's my game. Chase did it. So MLS players who are on a roster last season who are in the top 30 of goals scored in league history. We had Kai Kamara. We had Jossie Zardes, Joseph Martinez, CJ Sapong, Jozy Altidor, Freddy Montero, Will Bruin. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So
also for fun, Josh Wolf is on this list. Austin FC head coach.
Soon to be fired.
Soon to be former Austin FC head coach.
So, did you hear the news? This is how I came up with mine about Julian Hall getting his debut for New York Red Bulls.
Yes.
Weird rules around that. So, he's a 15-year-old. He's now 16. His birthday was on Sunday. So
New York labor laws.
He was 15, 364 days old when he played that game. So now he is the sixth youngest player or seventh youngest player to have played an MLS match. Can you name the six guys who have been younger than him that have played an MLS match?
That's really tough.
I know you'll be able to pick the number one guy for sure.
That's tough because I see these headlines and it feels like every other year almost somebody overtakes somebody on this list. But it's tough to think of the names. So Freddie Adu.
Freddie Adu is number one. There's a few names on here you'll definitely know. There's only one that I honestly didn't really know.
Is Cade Cowell on this list?
Cade Cowell is not on this list.
Axel Kai from RSL?
No. He hasn't. I don't think he's gotten any actual first team minutes with RSL.
Man.
So I'll give you a hint. Or do you want a hint, or you think you got it?
I'll take a hint.
So Freddie Adu is number one. Number two is probably very high profile player in world soccer.
Alphonso Davies.
Yes.
Man, 15, I don't know how I missed that.
15 years, 257 days when he debuted for Vancouver.
I remember watching.
For anybody that doesn't know, Freddie Adu was 14 years old when he played his first game.
That's
for
crazy.
DC.
I remember just watching Alphonso Davies just torch the Timbers as like a 16-year-old, and it was just nuts.
It was sad to watch because at the time I remember it was just like, what are we doing? Because he started playing in 2016, and that was a down year for the Timbers. After winning the cup and then just seeing a 16-year-old torch us made it even worse. You got any more guesses in you or need a hint?
I'll take another hint.
Number three is probably the one guy that I think you wouldn't really know. I'll give you his club, though. DC United. He made his debut September 10th of 2022.
It's Kevin Paredes?
Not Kevin Paredes.
Is he still at DC?
He's still at DC. He spent a lot of stints at their affiliate, like
Loudon.
Loudon United, yeah.
Do you know what position he is? Is he a defender?
Yep, central defender, 6'3".
Oh, man, I can see this in my head because I know Rooney started playing him a bunch when and was giving him minutes, and always talking about him when he took over that coaching position. I cannot think of it, though.
You give up?
I give up for that one.
Matai Akinboni.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that.
I was going to say, I never really knew this guy's name, but I remember, yeah, Rooney like coming in and being really high on him. Yeah, 15 years, 328 days old. That's crazy wild. That there is a center back that young playing in MLS.
That's wild. Well done. Well done, DC.
Well done. So we got three more guys. I'll give you three strikes to figure out these three guys. I'll give you a hint, though. The next one on the list, 15 years, 351 days old, made his debut in 2021 for the Seattle Sounders.
Is it Obed Vargas?
It is Obed Vargas. Two more.
Vamos.
Still have three strikes left. These guys are both, they both are tied actually for fifth because they were the exact same age. They were both 15 years, 362 days old.
It's very specific.
The first one made his debut in 2020 for LAFC.
LAFC, wow.
You wouldn't expect that from LAFC. Such a successful club, you wouldn't expect them to be starting a 15-year-old.
Man, I don't know if I know this one, honestly.
He's still at LAFC. He went on loan to Las Vegas Lights, came back to LAFC. He's kind of been with their second team. He's 19 years old. Mexican-American.
I feel like this guy scored against the Timbers in, like, COVID season. I can't remember.
He has not scored in MLS.
Then I'm crazy. I can't think of this one.
He's a midfielder. No clue?
I'm going to take the L. I give up.
Eric Dueñas.
Eric Dueñas. Sounds familiar, but I wouldn't have got that.
Really? I feel like I remember him getting some shine from the media when he played for LAFC. Last year, he got his most appearances. He had 18 appearances for LAFC.
I feel like I remember him playing. You know, when you see a lot of these 15, 16-year-olds, you can tell they're a kid. They like the clothes look like out of place and baggy on them. And
yeah.
They just look like a kid, whereas, or you have like the DC center back, like that guy fits in, or Axel Kai. He looks like a grown man.
Just looks like a beast. Yeah.
All right, hit me with the last one.
This last one, I do not know if you're going to be able to get, honestly, because I did not recognize his name. He's gotten his debut more recently. He got his debut June 21st of 2023. So last year, it was definitely a headline for FC Cincinnati.
FC Cincinnati?
Yep.
That's surprising.
That is. I didn't expect that. It's crazy, too, because a lot of these guys, like some of those older ones, they've gone on and had a career, but a couple of these that are more recent, you really got to reach for the headline because they haven't really been given too many other opportunities.
Yeah, I'm stuck. I don't know a Cincinnati young signing like that. I'm completely lost. I give up.
Steven Jimenez.
Yeah, I never heard of him.
Came through at FC Cincinnati 2. He played futsal in Brazil before joining like FC Cincinnati on like a youth contract. And yeah, he's only had two appearances for them, but came on, made his start at 15 years, 362 days old, which is crazy.
I wonder how. That's interesting. That I wouldn't have got that. That's impressive. Remember LAFC? They had a player who was like an indoor soccer player at one point. I wonder if we'll see more of that.
Is it Jao Paulo? That one young guy that like...
I don't think
no,
so.
No, that was who they picked up from the Super Draft.
I think he was like another Mexican-American, like Hispanic. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was Perez or something like that. Number 26. Could look it up. Got my computer right here, but I'm just going to go based off of my vague memory.
I'll go down the rest of this list. I'll just read them off. Seattle with three players on this list total.
Danny Leva.
So Danny Leva, 16 years, 31 days. And then Reed Baker Whiting, 16 years, 46 days. SKC is on the list with Gianluca Busio, 16 years, 61 days. And then number 10 on this list is Caden Glover with St. Louis City, 16 years, 66 days. Made his debut last year. He's now 11th on the list, though, because of Julian Hall making his debut. Kind of crazy. We touched on it briefly, but, yeah, he hasn't been allowed to be in their lineup at all this year because of New Jersey labor laws. You're not allowed to have – if somebody under 16 can't work past, like, 6 p.m. or something, So since they had such an early game, they're finally able to have him in the lineup. Crazy that they've been wanting him to be in the lineup so badly, but they were like restricted by labor laws. You would that's like such a weird thing you would never expect to have happen for a professional soccer team.
Really wild and cool for him to do it against, you know, Miami and with all these famous players that he probably grew up playing against in FIFA. Or
that would be crazy. Your first ever professional game at 15 years old, you come on and play against like Luis Suarez and Busquets and Jordi Alba, and you beat them 4-0.
Love it. We love MLS. We love the Burger
League.
That's
amazing. Anyways, shall we wrap up with some predictions?
Some predictions, and then we'll get the heck out of your ears.
Yes, sir. First up, we got the Copa Tejas. We got Austin hosting Dallas. The most thrilling match of the week. This is the best rivalry in the league.
Both teams down in the dumps right now.
What are you going with here? I'm going with a 2-1 Dallas win. I think Austin just sucks. And I think Dallas, this is the type of game that Dallas will get fired up for to make a statement.
I think you're probably right. I can definitely see that. I was leaning that way. I was leaning Dallas victory. I'm going to 1-1 draw, though. Dallas hasn't impressed me. They've been really underwhelming. They had a lot of injuries. But you know what Austin knows how to do? They know how to draw games at home. They'll be up. They'll be up maybe 2-1 or something. I have them 1-1 draw. But they're going to find a way to concede late in the second half and then just have a disappointing. But not, it's like you said about Peter Vermees. Even though they're last in the conference, they're not doing great. Josh Wolf is going to give just enough hope and glimmers for this game to just finish. And it's the Matt Hedges Derby.
You love it. You love to see it. Next up, we got a game that I will be at. The Portland Timbers make the trek up to Vancouver. What do you got for this game? This is going to be interesting. Vancouver's riding high right now. Portland was. Both teams coming off a loss.
Yeah, this is an intriguing one. Very, very jealous you're going to this game. Looks like an awesome away day. You'll have a blast. But I'm going a 2-2 draw. I was very tempted to say Vancouver's going to run away with this game at home. It just feels like the trajectory Portland's kind of on. Not that I think they'll have a bad year, but I don't know. Vancouver's been really solid. It's going to be Vanni Sartini's first game coaching. Chase gets to witness it in the flesh. Respect to him.
I'm in the second row as well.
He's sitting close. Are you going to harass him?
We're down in the corner, so if he comes down to celebrate with his team, I'm definitely throwing some M&Ms at him. I'm going Portland 10-0.
You better be screaming at Ryan Gold and Ali Ahmed whipping in those corner kicks.
That is true. We will be close enough to harass them and get a bunch of dirty stares from Canadians that probably won't say anything to me.
Are you going to be on the Southsiders, their supporters group, or are you on the other end?
Couldn't tell you. I'm close to their supporters group, even better.
Yeah, I got a 2-2 draw. 2-2 draw.
What, they're going to have a clump of 20 people next to each other instead of just evenly dispersed around the rest of the stadium?
This guy's not making ally. I got a lot of family up there, so I take it nice for them, but...
I'm going 3-1 Portland. I think Portland makes a statement. Phil Neville in his first real rivalry game. This is the type of game he gets the boys fired up for. He speaks of the old days, the Manchester United versus Liverpool, the Everton versus Liverpool. He's going to get these boys fired up. He's going to talk about what it means to the fans.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
After the game, he's going to take his little green vest off and
how
sign
come that
it.
Guy hasn't worn any other clothes? He just has that
a
one...
little weird he wears the same outfit
he
every
time.
He has
that one jumper, and then he just throws it in the wash.
And it's weird. It doesn't have any... It's not like Timbers. Like, it doesn't have a badge. It's just green. It's just a green...
Really? I thought it had, like, a Timbers logo on the
There's
side.
No Timbers logo. It's just like a... It's not even like a Timbers green. It's like a weird, like...
It's olive.
Like an olive green. It looks nice. I thought it looked nice, and I thought it was a Timbers thing, so I was like, oh, that's sweet. I really want to get that. And then I looked closer, and no, he's just wearing like a green jumper with a green vest over, and like sweatpants. Like,
I feel like that's the English coach way. They they're always wearing like a tracksuit or, you know, comfortable.
What does Dean Smith wear? I still can't wait for that game to see those two guys
chuffing it up. I have no idea what Dean Smith wears. I couldn't tell you. I threw this last one on here. DC hosting Montreal. This is the Hernan Losada legacy match. Both of their former managers, who both these teams fired within about a year. DC hosting Montreal. 1-0, DC United at home. Give me Christian Benteke. Just complacent header in the box.
I'm going 1-0 Montreal. I think they turn up for this game. I think on the road, they're going to really dig in defensively, and I think DC doesn't have the tools to really unlock them, and then they'll just explode on the counterattack. It'll be fun to watch. You know what game I wanted to predict that I think will be interesting this upcoming week is going to be Miami against New York City FC. So I could see that just either being an absolute bloodbath where Miami thrashes them, or NYCFC just digs in and then Bakrar just runs 90 miles an hour down the field and blasts it over the bar. Occasionally hits the target and scores.
You just described the 1 year of Darren Maddox on the Portland team. 2 years, sorry.
Dude, that was the most eventful 2 years, though. That was really fun to watch.
I will say, you know, I'll take a player like that who, like, you know, who's exciting, who's doing these active things. He gets the crowd into the game, as opposed to a, you know, a lazier quote unquote striker who's, you know, just more of a poacher. It's more fun to watch a guy who's willing to, like, let his wheels run and just burst out with pace.
To see a front three of Darren Maddox, Brian Fernandez, and I would say, like, Asprilla, but he's not as electric. Maybe Asprilla back when he first joined
the
Timbers.
Give me Jorge Perlaza in that front three.
Am I going Khalif Al-Hassan? That would be fun, though. Those three guys, like, even just a front two of Darren Maddox and Brian Fernandez would have been a handful for any team in the entire world. Just two just crackheads just sprinting around the field.
Alvis Powell just overlapping on one flank.
Put Alvis Powell in the front three. I don't care.
You know what? You know, we've talked about you're spoiled as a fan of certain teams, of certain eras that were fun to watch. You know, I wish we cherished 2016 when we had... We had Fernando Arias. We missed out on the playoffs, but we had the potential of a Jack McInerney and Darren Maddox striking lineup. Can you picture that? That's what we live for in this podcast. Those two profiles of players.
That is a very odd yet satisfying duo if it works well. That
feels
like
pro clubs. It feels like pro clubs.
What Dante Van Zier and Lewis Morgan did this week, that's what could have happened in Portland. Almost 10 years ago.
Probably happened twice in the Open Cup against Wilmington Hammerheads.
Just imagine Jack McInerney doing little heel flick layoffs. It's Insigne and Bernadeschi. they're just doing these weird little heel flicks and stuff around Tommy Thompson at San Jose away.
I believe in this team. I believe in this club. Tommy Thompson lighting up the boys. At halftime.
Oh, man.
This is all just MLS lore and heritage that most people won't have a clue.
Most people wouldn't, but I would encourage people to try and find Darren Maddox highlights.
Look up that. Do you remember that one? I remember I watched it so many times. For one, because the Timbers signed him, but then also because Darren Maddox in FIFA had one of the highest jumping.
He had the best jumping stat in the game. And which was so weird because I never saw him really do headers.
Because you'd always look up those, at least I would, of Ultimate Team on FIFA. Best heading cards in FIFA. Best jumping. Best pace. Darren Maddox. He was a 68 rated non-rare silver. And there's this one clip where he, I think they're playing Toronto. It was when he was at Vancouver. And he literally, jumps over the shoulders. Not he uses it to, propel himself with his hands. He just jumps and clears a guy's shoulder and heads in a goal. It is nuts. And they must have just watched that one game.
And then that was it.
The EA headquarters are in Vancouver, so it's maybe they watch a little extra. I doubt it, but...
You know what I would love more than Darren Maddox highlights is the Darren Maddox anti-highlights. not the goals, but all the just insane... Just him sprinting down a loose ball and then taking a wayward touch out of bounds. That was what we got to watch for two full years of Darren Maddox coming on as a super sub. like taking a touch where there's no way he's going to get to it, but then just gets chopped down by like a clunky defender in the box.
Some of my best memories are going to the Timbers games, me, you, and our other buddy, and just watching like that Timbers team, because we were first in the West when in 2017 when Darren Maddox was
That's hilarious to think about. Like, if you really wanted to defend him, you just don't do anything, and he'll probably miss the chance. But when you get close, then he just somehow he gets like a weird touch that goes 10 yards away, and then you just hack his leg, and he just gets a penalty.
I've got two obscure pieces of knowledge, and then we can wrap this up. One, the Talk Timbers MLS podcast that it's like the Timbers release. It gives weekly information about the club. They play like that little radio intro. It's got some different like commentary clips of Timbers goals. There's one goal where it's like it says like Valeri puts in the rebound after like a chaotic play in the box. I'm 99% sure that's Darren Maddox, and I know exactly what goal. It's like him bombing in the box, just like chipping it at the goalkeeper, then Valeri just like taps it in. But then also, first game of the season, Timbers play Colorado. Keegan Rosenberry for the Rapids gets exposed and just he gets his lunch eaten by Anthony. And another Timbers podcast, the Soccer Made in Portland one, was pointing out they were like, Keegan Rosenberry got exposed in the exact same part of the field, like on that north end of the Timbers Army in the box in the right back position, in the same exact spot, but it was Darren Maddox in 2017, apparently, who just like totally just, it must have been against the Rapids or Philadelphia, and he was just like destroying him. So
I love that.
I just love a random shout like that. Darren Maddox heritage. Love it.
What a different time of talent identification for the Timbers versus now. We have a bunch of these like silky smooth, like Brazilian and like Colombian guys that are just so nonchalant and just like weave through the defense. Back then it was like Donovan Ricketts just trucking guys in our goalie box. And then
love it. We used to
Fernando Audi like doing drills in practice with like football pads, like they're trying to shove him around, and then you got Darren Maddox who just would basically sprint the 90 minutes.
We used to be a club of Jamaicans and Argentinians. That was it.
Now it's Colombian and Brazilians.
Canadians as well.
And Canadians, that is true. But we should wrap this up before we ramble about the Timbers for too long. I'll always talk about the Timbers, though.
Respect. It's going to be it. Episode 50. We're going to wrap it up. One of these days, we will catch you on X or Instagram. but for now, yeah, follow us on X, MLS Netboys on X. Email us, MLSNetBoys@gmail.com. That's all I got.
As always,
Preston Judd.
Come on the show.